Stella stared into the holding cell. On the small cot, the shape under the blanket looked too small to be a 14-year-old.
He hasn't been eating well.
Stella glanced at the tray, which looked untouched, cold, and unappetizing.
I can see that.
We've tried. I've tried myself, but he won't open up at all.
Toby. Toby, wake up.
The blanket twitched, then stilled.
Toby, time to go.
The blanket twitched. Then he poked out a thin face, eyes dangerously intense.
Who are you?
Stella Constantine. I've come to settle things here. You can come with me.
How'd I know you're not one of them?
She's not, lad. We checked.
But Toby's eyes never left Stella's.
Toby, did you ever hear of Stavros' idiot daughter Stella? The idiot who gave the family codes to her lover? That Stella, yes. But even I didn't stay an idiot forever. Let's get you out of here, shall we?
He unrolled the blanket and sat up unsteadily.
I don't feel well.
You haven't eaten enough to keep a mouse alive, is what I hear. And what that tray looks like. Don't faint on me, Toby. We don't have time for that.
Ma'am?
You can eat the roll. Here.
Stella broke it in half, spread jam on it, and handed it to Toby.
Eat it.
He stared at her for a moment, then took the roll and bit into it.
Toby, I want to get you off this station before someone finds both of us. I've taken care of everything else.
She saw his jaw stop moving as he took that in, and then resumed chewing.
I have your personal belongings, and I brought you something to wear other than jail garb or Vadi uniform. You'll travel as my son.
You aren't old enough.
I will look old enough, don't worry. Finish that roll, and another.
Stella turned to the guard.
Can you get us a couple of hot sandwiches, maybe?
Of course.
Where are we going?
Stella raised her brows. He had not said, "Where are you taking me?" He was starting to engage. Promising.
I don't want to tell you here. These people have done a good thing in protecting you, but I'm not sure their records are as secure as they think.
Toby had wolfed down another roll already and was looking at the rest of the tray, despite the layer of congealed fat on the blob that might be meat.
Don't. If you haven't been eating, let your stomach get used to the rolls first.
But you asked for hot sandwiches.
I asked for time alone, but in different words.
You're not like the captain.
No, I'm not. I'm not a spacer. I'm administration.
When she was anything. When she was not just that idiot Stella. The permanent example of what could go wrong. The petty little position she'd held until her pregnancy was only administration to someone aboard a ship. What she'd done since, no one knew about.
But to lie...
Misdirect. Similar, but different.
I don't think it's right to lie.
I don't think it's right to end up dead just because it's convenient for someone else. Now, can you stand up yet?
He could, just, though he wavered a bit. Stella handed him the sack.
Put those on. I'll turn my back.
You're not going to leave?
That terrified modesty. She remembered that from her own adolescence. She turned her back.
No, I'm not. I'm also not interested in your skinny little body, except in keeping it alive. Change.
Behind her, the indignant rustles of an annoyed teen. Good. It would keep him from fainting if he was angry enough with her. She focused her attention outward.
The guard should be back by now. Why isn't he? Why isn't anyone coming?
Stella queried her implant just as it pinged her, warning of chemical contamination. She held her breath, reached into her pocket, slapped a full face membrane onto herself, then pulled out another and whirled to see Toby opening his mouth to gasp.
No!
She tossed the mask. Thank all the gods the boy had been properly trained. He knew what it was, didn't breathe until he had it on. His new outfit, the one-piece gray suit, was half-fastened. He fumbled at the closure and then picked up the jacket, eyes wide.
Can you use a weapon?
He shook his head.
Stay behind me, then.
Stella drew her own. For all the good that would do if their enemies had the weapons she suspected. Out in the corridor, nothing stirred. She saw, just at the corner, the guard who should have brought sandwiches. And there were the sandwiches on the floor beside his outstretched hand. The other way, deeper into the jail. She paused a moment to slip a highly illegal data probe into the port on the wall, at the guard's duty station, and suck out the plans for the police station. Every space on a station had at least two exits. This one had four. The main one to the passage, two rear entrances, and one to the side through a smaller office. No time to ponder. She led Toby to the right, toward the cell block rear exit. If the enemies trusted their gas, they might not have someone outside, or he might be careless. The outer door was locked, of course. She had expected that. Toby's eyes widened farther when she pulled her tools from her pocket. Picking locks, both mechanical and electronic, wasn't the usual skill set of a Vata daughter, but Stella had seen no reason not to learn from later acquaintances, or to tell her father all she'd learned. Outside, the passage appeared to be a service corridor, set with trash containers neatly labeled with the type of trash each should contain. To the right, she saw the open back door of what, by the smell, was a cafe of some kind, its biologicals trash bin overflowing. She remembered that Huntari Cafe had been next to the police station, probably a favorite hangout of the police, and thus not a good back door to enter. Farther down, a bakery and a greengrocer. She hurried Toby that way.
Can we take
off? No. We may not have any warning next time.
She turned back in time to see someone glance down the passage and quickly turn away. Not good. They were opposite Murchison Books and Antiquities, whose bin contained packing materials. The door seemed ajar. Stella yanked. It came open. She pushed Toby in, then slid in herself. They were in a cluttered back room with more packing materials and open containers piled on a cluttered desk and on the floor. A closed door in front of them suggested that the actual shop lay beyond. To the right, a narrow staircase rose toward the ceiling where another door was labeled private. Stella heard nothing from any direction. She boosted her implant sensitivity and heard something from outside. Footsteps, probably, and the rise and fall of voices from the other side of the closed door. She could not make out what they were saying. From outside, another set of footsteps, this time coming closer. She looked around again. No place to hide, really, but up the stairs. She motioned to Toby, finger to lips. If the owner had the private office on an alarm system, they were out of luck. Stella tried the door of the private office, open, and no alarm sounded when she opened it, and she and Toby went in. She closed it behind them as her enhanced hearing picked up the sound of the shop door opening and footsteps coming through.
What is it?
Open up!
The shop entrance is 3214 Scurry Lane. This entrance is secured.
Open up, damn it! We think fugitives got in!
Not through this door. Who are you anyway? You don't sound... You are the police! What kind of idiot do they think I am anyway? Sam, it's Wraith. Something's happening over here. You better check the substation on 4th Blue East. Some yabos are trying to get in the back door of my shop claiming to be after fugitives, but they aren't any of yours. Hardy, this is Wraith. Block trouble behind me now. Probably coming around front. Police not responding. Could be the bunch we're looking for.
Yabos?
The last time Stella had heard that word in a very similar voice had been 2 years back, somewhere very far from here.
Wraith? That Wraith?
Ah, no answer, eh? Well, I've got to close up shop before they come in the front. Ta.
Stella looked around the office. Neater than that below, a desk with ordinary data hookups and displays, a bunk covered with a striped blanket, a small synthesizer and meal prep center, a curtain across... She glanced in. A tiny but very clean toilet-shower combo. Cabinets above and below the desk along the walls. A secondary screen on which movement caught her eye. The display of a security system, now showing the back of someone she assumed was the proprietor, as he pulled down louvered screens across the shop displays. The door, she noticed, was already closed and barred. The man looked to be of medium height, slender, with thinning gray hair pulled back to a braid tied with a ribbon. He had the second display covered now and turned.
That Wraith indeed.
He glanced up into the security system scan and smiled. Winked. He knew. Naturally, he would. Naturally, he would have video pickups in his inner office as well as downstairs. And naturally, he would have checked them. He walked back to the store's service desk without looking up again. That, too, was Wraith. He had made his point. Now he would wait around for whatever help he'd called in. Stella glanced at Toby, wishing she could spirit him away somehow. He was too young for this, and she couldn't explain. Wraith would have audio pickups everywhere. If he knew they were there, if he knew who they were, who she was, then she might as well use his systems. Stella found the security system controls for the interior scan and re-aimed the pickups so that she could watch Rafe. He was just standing there, entering something in the computer. A list of books, she saw when she zoomed in, from the stack of books on the counter. Old books, antiques, real paper. She couldn't quite focus on the titles, but she could, from up here, link into the computer he was using. She did that, first returning the surveillance vid to a scan that included the shop's front door. Under the day's date, a list of titles sufficiently odd that Stella paused, scrolling down, and tried to think what scam he was up to now. Some Historical Society's volumes 32 through 47. Estate rolls of places she'd never heard of. 3 cookbooks. A book of instructions for butlers.
Surely no one actually buys these things to read.
Toby tapped her arm and pointed at the toilet cubicle. Stella shook her head. It would make a sound anyone could hear. Though she suspected that Rafe had the upstairs soundproofed and scan-proofed as well as he could, gurgling and whooshing in pipes was one sound that no soundproofing really damped. Something moved on the surveillance vid, catching her peripheral vision. She glanced up. Rafe was moving toward the door, holding a weapon she didn't recognize. She turned up the sound on the vid and reduced the sensitivity on her implant. Rafe swept an arm down to a pocket, then to his face. Stella checked the ChemScan sidebar. Nothing yet. He was just being cautious. Light blossomed in the middle of the door. The attackers were trying to burn through.
Block party?
Got him, Rafe. 10 of them. Polies aren't here yet. But wait. There they come.
Any chem stain, Hardy?
No. You can open up if your door's not too damaged. Security screen has a hole as big as I am melted through.
Right.
Rafe tucked his weapon behind a display and hit the door controls. The outer louvered screen slid aside slowly, then stopped halfway, and he opened the inner door. Stella touched the controls, aiming the vidscan at the outer door. Now she could see the melted section. Another sidebar gave its probable temperature on the basis of thermal radiation, and beyond it, a scatter of bodies and some men holding weapons, already walking away. Others appeared in uniform. The arriving police, she presumed.
Looks like you had a problem.
We all do. Did you find out why Station 4th Blue East didn't respond?
Chem stunned. We think the attackers were after the Vada kid. Must have got him, too, because he's not there. Why were they after you, Rafe?
They said escaping fugitives. Tried to get in my back door, claim they were polies. Lucky I keep it locked. So I'm guessing that somehow the kid got away. After all, you had us all warned off to shelter him. Somebody must have taken him in.
Not you?
Not that I know of. Like I said, my back door's locked except when I'm putting out stuff to recycle or going over to Huntari for lunch. And then I lock it behind me. Nobody's reported them?
Not yet. Could be anywhere if the attackers didn't get him. We'd better find him in case there's more bad guys. By the way, you do know that vigilante action is illegal.
I was inside the whole time, Fred.
Right. Your close friends and neighbors just showed up fully armed and chem-protected by chance.
The whole station's jumpy, Fred. If they choose to help me out when the police have been immobilized, I'd say that's a good thing.
I'm not complaining, just pointing out the law, which is my duty. If the violation of ordinance has ceased, then that's all I have to do.
Thank you.
Want us to check out the store?
If you wish, but as I said, I was locked in back when they came, and you can see they didn't get through the front. Almost, though.
If you're sure, we do have other things to do. I'll have a new roster in that substation within the hour. All our people there are headed for hospital. And we'll add patrols. Forensics have to check out these bods and see if they can identify them. If you see any sign of the Vada kid, let me know. Oh, and there's a Vada family representative around somewhere. Was supposed to be headed for the police station, but we don't know if she got there.
She?
Yeah, a woman. I'll flash you the picture. Not a Vada herself, apparently, but a family retainer. S.M. Constantine. Probably a lawyer. Came in on an ISC courier.
I should report her too?
If you see her. Let's hope these scum didn't get her.
Let's hope. Look, I've got to call maintenance to get a repair crew over here. Talk later?
Right.
The policeman turned away. Rafe shut the inner door, picked up the weapon behind the display, and came back to the shop counter with another grin for the camera. At the counter, he made what seemed to be a perfectly straightforward call to station maintenance, requesting repair or replacement of the security grill and inner door of the shop on an urgent priority basis.
And I may be up in my back office. Just give me a call before you arrive.
Then, with a final glance at the camera, he headed toward the back of the store. Stella turned to Toby.
We're about to have company, it looks like. Remember, we're trespassing, and we have no rights.
Yes.
Toby looked pale again. Stella slid her own weapon back into its holster.
Stella, Stella, Stella. Do you have to be so dramatic?
Me?
It was all she could say. As always, he took her breath away, and memories crowded her mind.
My dear, if you just wanted to see me again, all you had to do was give me a call. Though I suppose with the Ansibles down, that might have been difficult.
Rafe glanced aside at Toby.
Vada kid, I suppose? Escape from custody? You better go use the toilet. Boy, you look ready to puke on my floor. And I wouldn't like that.
Toby gave Stella a desperate look. She nodded, and he fled to the toilet cubicle.
Nice work, Stella. Spurn my invitation, ignore me for years, then break into my shop and bring down God only knows what on my head. I suppose you'd rather I didn't tell the Pollies where you were.
When and if the personnel from that station wake up, they'll explain. I went there to authorize handling the remains of the others, and they told me about Toby, wanted me to take him. Then it got very quiet, and when I looked out, they were down. I took him out the back.
Which you just happen to know about and how to open the door.
I still have the pick locks.
And the data probe, I'll bet. I always said you were more like me than you wanted to admit.
And your door was ajar.
Luckily for you, since your pick locks would have set off a stun blast. I heard the front bell just as I came back in and didn't make sure it closed all the way. Foolish of me. Could have been fatal if the others had made it here first. I suppose you think I should thank you for that.
No, but I'll take thanks if you're offering them.
The same laugh. Warm tingles ran over her. Legend said it was your first love that always held some power over you. But in her case, the first love was an unpleasant memory, and Rafe a constant temptation. Toby came out of the toilet cubicle looking pale but less strained.
I'm sorry.
Rafe's grin at the boy was entirely comradely, with none of the rake-hell glint he gave Stella.
Fear does that. You look half-starved, boy. Didn't they feed you over at the station?
Couldn't eat, but now...
Now you could eat a whole ration pack in one bite, eh? Stella, it's up to you. I can feed you here, or we can play Lost and Found and let the police know where you are, and take the lad to Huntari for a good meal.
I want to get him to safety, which I suspect means on a ship with no Vada connections, out into space, as soon as possible. What do you think? Are there still assassins out there?
Could be. Finding a ship's not going to be easy either. Most of them won't take anyone with Vada connections or anyone from Slaughter Key, just in case. You'll need other ID if that's your plan. Where do you want to go? Back to Slaughter Key?
No. Last way, I'm thinking. Nobody expect us to go there, and it's right out on the fringes.
Last way. But Vada trades there, don't they?
Stella cursed silently. Of course he would know that. Rafe had an information network galaxy-wide.
Sometimes. No regular schedule that I know of, though I'm not in on all the family business.
Your checkered past.
My checkered past. So, I suppose you could arrange alternative IDs?
Easier if the Pollies don't know you're around. They have such traditional attitudes toward identity.
That's a yes, Toby.
Toby was wide-eyed. At least he wasn't interrupting.
We'd better feed the boy something here, then.
While Toby spooned down a bowl of flavored mush larded with restorative additives, Rafe sat at his desk manipulating his security scanners. Stella lounged on the cot, uncomfortably aware of its other use.
Station's in an uproar. Casual muggings dockside, nothing unusual. Vendettas, brawls, even wholesale gang fights in dockside bars. We're used to that, same as any station is. But blowing a docked ship, that shook everyone. Killed not just the crew, but about half the people in that sector, including the emergency response team there. Half the ships here pulled out right then and no one blamed them, though it meant we're short of some supplies. Nothing critical, but a nuisance. Pollies are overstretched, you know how station militia are.
Yes.
Stella did not want his lecture on police and militia organization. She'd had it before.
So, stationers organized block defenses. Everyone knew the perps were still here, most likely, on the hunt for the boy, or for any more Vada ships that showed up, or ships that might be friendly to Vada. Technically, it's illegal, but practically speaking, the Pollies were glad of our help, and so was station management. Longtime stationers were even able to access police armories. I'm not in that group.
He couldn't be, since 5 years before, he had been somewhere else. With her, one way and another.
You came in on an ISC courier, I hear. You know anything about the Ansible problem?
Only that they're down almost everywhere, and ISC is trying to get them back up. Apparently some are fried, and others just trashed.
Frying suggests sabotage to me. Something internal. What do they think?
I was encouraged not to ask. Condition of transport. But they'd take Toby and me if we got to them and wanted to go where they're going next.
Which is?
I don't know. Another thing I was encouraged not to ask. Eventually, I have a message for their headquarters, but I have no idea how many transfers that would be.
Rafe turned his chair around.
I see. I don't see you having any advantage to me at the moment. What do you have to trade?
Of course, he wouldn't help them for nothing. This was Rafe, after all.
Sufficient hard goods.
I'm moderately concerned for the welfare of this station. It has been a profitable connection. However, additional security measures and lower levels of trade may cut into my profits. Seeing as how Vada seems to be involved in causing me inconvenience, perhaps I should find another source of income.
Such as?
Rafe studied his fingernails.
Perhaps we should consider a partnership. Your family is in disarray. You must need allies. I have certain expertise and certain connections. You have, as you said, hard goods, and your family's legendary expertise in trade and profit, and a trade network second to none.
But if we are in disarray, how can that help you? I fear you suggest a partnership in which we cannot provide a fair balance of advantage.
Disarray, perhaps, but I've no doubt, however they've kept you sequestered, that you have access where someone like me might not. And vice versa. As I said before, Stella, we would make good partners.
Possibly. For a limited time. But you know, Rafe, I have other loyalties.
I know. So you said.
Rafe glanced at Toby, who was now staring into an empty bowl, studiously ignoring them both.
And I can see that the survival and welfare of this boy must be a priority. What is he to you, anyway?
A cousin.
Rafe stretched out his legs.
Well, let's start with keeping him safe. Does he have living family anywhere, or is this a lifelong commitment?
I have ears.
Stella grinned at this proof of Vada spirit.
Sorry, boy, but you were so quiet.
I don't know. I know my uncle's dead and everyone on the ship, but I don't know about others. My parents. Do you, Stella?
No. I know Vada ships and holdings have been attacked in many places, but with the Ansible shut down, I don't know about your parents specifically. Still, you're alive.
And we want to keep you that way. If that stuff you just ate sat well enough with you, dial another bowl of it. We need you strong and fit for whatever comes next.
How do you know Stella?
Let me count the ways. No, that's not nice. At least you have enough blood to blush. Stella and I met some years back, and nothing more is the truth of it. I asked her to partner me, and she refused. She wanted to get back to her family.
Are you the one that... Sorry.
The smile Rafe turned on the boy was full of his rakish charm. Toby's blush deepened with the swift embarrassment of the adolescent who has just put his foot in it.
No. No, he's not. He was after... after that.
Stella's heart thundered. This wasn't anything she wanted to discuss with a youngster, even if they'd had time to explain it all.
He's right, though. You should eat a little more if you can.
And you, Stella.
Stella smiled when he glared at her.
Suit yourself, but you need a clear head, and hunger doesn't help.
I'm fine. Good breakfast and all that.
So, partners?
You just close up your shop and leave?
Not much market for antiquities and books without a certain number of travelers coming through. Hard to get new stock, too. And the stationers have bought all they're going to until trade picks up.
Rafe, what were you really selling?
That's my business, isn't it?
Not if we're going to partner. I have enough wolves on my tail already. I want to know what other hazards you're bringing into this.
None I know of. Some of the packages may have contained additions to the objects on the manifest, but you saw how friendly the Pollies were. Perhaps this discussion could take place another time.
Perhaps. I will have something to eat, I think.
Good. I don't want you to regret a decision made by low blood sugar.
You're so thoughtful.
Stella smiled when he glared at her.
What do you need from your base? And are you still based on the courier, or do you have a rental?
Everything I actually need is with me. I have a duffel aboard ship, though. And I'd have to let them know if I take another route out.
They have room for three?
Probably not.
Her cabin had been cramped for one. She suspected the life support on couriers was less flexible than on trade ships.
We'll need to find out. Do you trust him?
Of course.
He said nothing, just looked at her. Stella remembered what he'd said about the implications of the Ansible problems.
Oh, you mean do I trust this particular courier crew?
She thought about it. Scrupulously polite, uninquisitive, just as they had been uninformative.
If they'd wanted to kill me, it would have been easy.
Yes, but you're not traveling as Vada, are you? Vada representative, the police said.
They surely know.
Probably. And probably safe enough. But you'll need a secure way to communicate. Something better than the station lines, which are possible to compromise.
Meaning you have.
Meaning I could. And so could anyone else with my expertise. For the boys' sake, I suggest extreme caution. And forgive my suspicions, I would like some assurance that you actually do have those items of value you spoke of.
Stella slipped her weapon out. Rafe did not move, but she felt his attention sharpen. She handed it to Toby, who hastily put down his second bowl of food.
Toby, this is a model you may not be familiar with. Safety's that red knob. Pull it out now. It's off safety now. Keep it pointed at Rafe, whom I trust absolutely to be Rafe.
Rafe smiled, this time with what looked like genuine appreciation.
And do not hesitate to shoot if he makes a move or if I suddenly fall over.
Yes.
Toby's hand, she noticed, did not shake.
Now.
Stella reached into her bodice and fished out the top pocket of the safe, pulling out the little suede container. She shook the stones out on her hand. They flashed brilliance around the room.
Yes, genuine, natural.
Stella rolled them back into the suede pouch and tucked it away again. Rafe's pulse had quickened, visible in his neck.
I gather there are more?
Oh, yes. But not all in the same place.
Of course. I'm satisfied, then, that you have sufficient stock of value to enter into an equal partnership. I suppose I should show you mine.
He turned the chair.
Toby.
Rafe froze.
I suppose you should sit perfectly still until our agreement is finalized.
You don't want to see my accounts?
I don't want to see the business end of any of the weapons you have in your desk or on your person.
Rafe spread his hands.
My, you have learned. All right. Terms?
Stella indicated her implant with one finger.
Recording. I know your scans are on, at least in here, so you'll have your own record as well. Partnership, limited, 60 days to start with, renewable by agreement of both parties. Can be unaffiliated by either party, with due notice of not less than 24 hours on station or 24 hours after arrival if on shipboard. Absolute for personal protection from physical, chemical, or biological attack by the partners or partner's agent for the duration of the partnership and for a minimum of 3 standard days following its ending. Usual for sharing of information. All information relevant to the partnership shared, other information optional. Do you agree to these terms, Raphael Stoner Modestin?
I should never have taught you so well, Stella. Yes, I, Raphael Stoner Modestin, agree to these terms as offered by Stella Maria Celeste Vata. Sorry, I don't know your married name. I swear to abide faithfully by my partner in this enterprise, and to consider paramount the welfare of all partners. Does the boy enter into this?
Stella carefully did not look at Toby.
He is of age, just. Toby, do you agree to these terms as full partner, or do you wish the protection of a minor?
You're asking me? As a member of Vata family, yes, I agree to these terms as a partner, accepting both Stella, Maria, Celeste, Vata, Constantine, and Raphael, Stoner, Modestin as partners for this enterprise.
Good. And I, Stella, Maria, Celeste, Vata, Constantine, accept you, Toby Lee Vata, and Raphael Stoner Modestin, as my partners in this enterprise, according to the terms as recorded in my implant and in Sarah Modestin's office security recorders.
Fine. Now can the boy... Sorry. Toby quit threatening me with a live weapon?
Of course. Toby, point that weapon at the floor and push in the red knob.
You're sure we can trust him?
At this point, we have to find out. But yes, Rafe has his own code of honor, and I believe we can trust him.
Rafe sat very still until the weapon was back in Stella's hands and hidden away once more in her holster.
Stella, dearest, you nearly made me foul my britches. I do believe Toby would have shot me.
Indeed he would. But he didn't. So you have no complaints now, right?
Right. To work, then. When I realized trade was going right out the airlocks after the explosion, I began converting some of my assets to the same kind of portable hard goods you have. Of course, it was difficult because others on the station were trying to do the same thing, and antiquities are not necessities.
And you always have your run money.
I'm well reproved for earlier misdeeds. Yes, of a sufficiency. What I propose to do now is put my stock in storage, explain to the authorities that without trade there's not sufficient profit, and depart. If you're known to have employed me, perhaps as a bodyguard, that would explain...
That an antiquities dealer has bodyguard capabilities?
No, simply my departure. Perhaps you engaged me as the best you could find, all the regular bodyguards being unwilling.
Would they be unwilling?
They could be dissuaded.
I see. So you have far more deals going on this station than selling books and things and... whatever comes in the parcels.
Rafe spread his hands.
You know me too well, Stella.
Alas, she did. But after the first appalling realization that she had put herself and her emotions in danger, she had also realized that Rafe was the one person who might, just might, help her get to Lastway and find Kai, especially since she had Toby along.
So my thought is first to tell ISC that we need more berths, if they've got them.
A secure line. You need a secure line. Do you have the courier's contact number?
Yes. What do you have, optical spider hooks all over the place?
Not exactly all over.
Rafe pulled out a number of thin, stiff fibers from beneath a book and ran them into a standard configuration plug, which he then plugged into the side of his desk unit.
Berth number. Got that. All right. Since I'm sure you don't trust me, you enter the contact code with your own lily-white hands.
Stella came over to the desk and entered the code. Of course, his system would capture it, but it wasn't the hidden one. When the linkage icon went green, she looked at Rafe.
Do you want me to stick to text?
Better.
Fine.
Stella keyed in the pertinent data, as she saw things, and waited until the answer came back, demanding a visual. Rafe shrugged and moved over to take the blanket off the bunk while Stella sat at the desk.
Vid hookups on your left, third row.
Stella found it and plugged in. The courier's comm officer stared out of Rafe's desk monitor in the crisp, brilliant color she'd have expected from one of Rafe's hookups.
Are you all right? Something's got the station police stirred up. Captain wants to leave as soon as we can.
I'm fine. Joss, what they didn't tell us is that there was a survivor of the Vada attack. An apprentice who was off ship at the time. They've had him in protective custody. I was signing him out when there was a bit of trouble. Thing is, I need to get him off station and somewhere safe, but I'm betting you don't have room.
I can ask the captain. How big is he?
And a third party. I'm bringing an escort from here. I can't take care of the kid alone.
I'm sure we can't do that. I'll ask the captain, but we're only a courier.
I know. And I'm very grateful, but that's how it is.
Understood. But you still have gear aboard, and you had urgent messages for the chair. And where are you calling from, anyway?
Secure line. I know. I'm hoping you can offload my gear and take a burst message.
Well, that we can do, but if you're in danger...
I'll be all right, if I keep the boy and myself out of sight for a bit.
Toby did not want to stay alone in the upper office, but Rafe insisted that Stella not go to the dock alone.
Chances are they're all dead. But if they're not, Stella needs an escort, and I can't guard both of you at once.
What if someone comes here? I'm not even supposed to be here!
Toby looked better. The enriched mush had made a big difference, Stella noticed.
I just asked maintenance when they might get around to repairs, and they said a minimum of 2 days. They're still coping with the blast damage on the docks. And I've told the block protection group that I'm closed until I get the repairs done. No one should come, and if they do, you ignore them. Just in case...
Rafe opened one of the file drawers in the cabinet. Whatever was inside wasn't files in the usual sense, and he came out with a bell-barreled weapon.
This is a crowd control weapon, Toby. It will take out a substantial number with each shot because it's loaded with shrapnel. And no, Stella, it's not legal, but it's dead easy to use. What you do, Toby, is point this at the bad guys and pull this lever. It kicks like ding-dong, so brace it on your hip or a desk or something. It will make a horrible mess, including the wall behind your target. So be sure it's necessary. Otherwise, don't hesitate. For chem protection, I can do better than those membrane masks Stella had. Good for out and around and being inconspicuous, but this...
He hauled out a standard Pitston protective suit.
This is your best bet. Ever worn one?
We did drill in them aboard the ship.
Good. Now, I've set all the external systems on full alarm. You have an implant. Let's see, you should have channel 14 open, right?
Right.
I'll program the alarms to ping your implant. First ping, anything, no matter how minor, suit up. Second ping, get the weapon and back into the toilet space. You have a clear line of fire, and they have to find you. Don't please shoot us when we come back.
Oh, I won't.
And dial yourself some high protein now, about 100 grams. We'll be back in a couple of hours, I expect.
Toby looked at Stella, and she made herself smile at him.
Don't fret, Toby. We'll be back for you.
Not surprisingly, Rafe had covert exits from his shop, and he and Stella finally emerged two passages over. They looked, she thought, like any young businesswoman and her older male escort. His gray hair and conservative clothes were, she knew, a disguise, but she was too aware of the potential danger. The attackers would certainly have vidscan of her from dockside, and possibly a line into customs and immigration. Rafe nodded at a small cafe.
We need to stop by here.
We do?
But Stella followed his lead. She was certain he wasn't after a quick snack, but he sat down in an empty booth facing the door. Stella sat opposite him, and her back itched. Facing the door was her choice.
Rafe! Heard you had some problems over at your place.
That was a brisk-looking man with a long apron and a pot of something in his hand.
Idiots tried to burn in my front door. I tell you, Lars, this about does me in. Trade's been down, and I've foisted off all the old books and prints and statuettes you longtime stationers can absorb.
You're right there. We still haven't finished the Longway Saga, and Myths of Ancient Rome may never make it off the shelf.
They don't know when they'll get to my security grill, let alone the door, and I don't know if I can afford it anyway. Can't do business until it's fixed, not without going out with a box and obstructing the common walkway.
Which is against the fire code, right. Coffee?
No, I was wondering if you'd seen Joey.
Ah, Joey. Well, I heard he was assisting the police with their inquiries. I told you, Rafe, Joey could get you into trouble.
He's not bad. I want you to meet my friend Sally here.
Sally! Any friend of Rafe's?
He looked past them, his gaze sharpening.
Be right with you. Strangers. Trouble?
Maybe. I'd hate to cause a problem.
No problem.
The man moved in the direction of his gaze. Stella fought the urge to turn around.
We might have to leave. I'm sorry, I thought a snack would do you good.
Very interesting girl, Sally.
Oh, yes. Known her a long time, I have. Once had a thing for her. She teaches primary.
Teaches?
Quite firm with the little lads, I understand. And a bit of a softy with the girls, especially the pretty ones.
You are a wicked man, you know that?
Oh, darling, I know that very well. You look pretty when you're mad, Sally dear.
You do realize I don't have to be mad to move fast.
That's good, because come on.
He was out of the booth, walking toward the back entrance.
Oh, I'm so sorry, gentlemen. It slipped out of my hand. You see,
Stella slid out of the booth and followed, not looking around. Then they were through the swinging door in a cramped kitchen, where a gray-haired woman kneaded a pile of dough on a counter and a skinny girl had her head in an oven, an array of tools spread on its open door.
Oh, Rafe! I've been meaning to tell you, I'm really enjoying the Long Way Saga.
I'm glad, Tuli. Catch you later, Mamie.
Sure! Ginny, get your head out of that oven and say hello to Rafe and, what's the name of your friend?
Sally. Never mind, Ginny. We're just passing through.
Bye, Rafe. Bye, Rafe.
The back door led them out into a passage, much like that behind Rafe's shop.
So all the bad guys aren't gone?
Apparently not. We'll have to go to Tommy's. I was hoping to avoid that. Joey's a little more reliable for this kind of thing.
Picking up my gear at the dock?
He looked at her. This time, her insides did nothing.
No. And we have to go to Tommy's first.
Tommy's appeared to be a home furnishing store, complete with new and used items and an in-store fabricator for custom orders. Design your own bed, the poster read. The illustration was nothing Stella would want to sleep in, but she supposed there were people of certain persuasions who would find it useful. Certainly not restful. As she looked around, more and more of the items seemed suitable for a particular clientele.
Don't worry. Tommy's staked out a market niche, but it's not the one he lives in.
Before Stella could ask, Tommy himself appeared. He dressed to appeal to the market niche, Stella assumed, and since it wasn't the one she lived in either, she felt uncomfortable.
Alternate IDs, Tommy. How much? How fast?
You have a problem, Rafe? I don't want trouble with the police. In my line of business, you know I can't afford—
To have them know that you're playing with the station master's daughter? I suppose not.
How'd you... What makes you think I...
She told me. I'm her father confessor, or something like that. You really shouldn't, Tommy. Young girls are not reliable about keeping secrets. You know that.
I know you're a pain in the...
Tommy looked at Stella.
And who's this? Some female agent?
A friend. To return to my first question, how fast, how much?
2 hours each. 5,000 each. Hard goods.
Fine. We need three. Me, her, and a 14-year-old kid. Male. Shorter than her. Dark hair, dark eyes.
I need the data.
Tommy, these are alternate IDs. You make the date up, and you don't screw around. We'll be back in 2 hours with the goods. Squeal and the deal's off.
But I said 2 hours each.
And I said we'd be back in 2 hours. Get busy.
But if I do...
If you don't... Then the station master's daughter will have a very unpleasant discussion with her mother, and her mother will have an even more unpleasant discussion with you. You did know the father's one of Bruno's men.
Tommy's skin paled even more and acquired a green undercast.
So you will have them ready, and we will pick them up, and you will have some trade goods, and all will be calm and bright, won't it?
Yes, Rafe. Ma'am?
Come on, Sal. Time to make tracks and drive a train on them.
From Tommy's, they traveled a fast, direct route to the docks, and Rafe stayed back as Stella walked up to the ISC dock warden, who waved to her.
Glad you're here, Sarah, because the captain's ready to break loose. Your duffel's here. They said something about a burst message.
No recording where I was. Can I use your set?
Of course, Sarah. I hear one of the crew lived?
A boy. Apprentice. I've got to take him somewhere. Nobody's going to Slaughter Key, I know that. I've hired a guard.
Yeah, I see him. Looks kind of old.
Age and treachery over youth and beauty, Pete.
Stella put on the headpiece, tapping the connection to make sure it was seated against her implant's external pickup, and closed her eyes. Composing a burst message required total concentration. She thought through what she needed to send. Pete hunched behind the service counter, weapons in hand. Stella couldn't see what was going on without unhooking the burst message headset. She reviewed what she'd recorded already, decided it was enough, coded it interrupted/trouble, and detached herself. The recording booth would already have transmitted the message to the courier's shielded comm center. At the ship's access, two armored ISC security personnel were firing at something in the middle distance, near the dockside entrance, she guessed. Prudence suggested that down on the deck would be a good idea. The recording booth wasn't armored. Stella slid down and eeled her way to Pete's side. He turned and tapped his implant. Stella nodded.
That guard of yours told us he spotted some trouble. He was right. Don't know if it was you or us they were after.
I'm armed.
Figure, just stay down.
Always listen to the professionals, Stella had been told often enough. She pulled out her weapon anyway and waited. Stella stayed down, not needing Pete's reminder.
Police are arriving.
Good. Safe to get up?
Probably, but I'd stay down another tick or so if I were you, just in case. Oh, here comes your guard.
Rafe came around the end of the counter.
You have interesting friends. Persistent, too, if not very bright.
Good job you spotted them.
Thank you. I was lucky. They didn't see me and they were talking openly.
Ah, I'll be glad to get off this place, and I wish you were coming with us, Stella.
I'll be all right.
Hope so.
Pete slanted another glance at Rafe, this one slightly edged. Rafe's smile appeared entirely genuine, even to Stella.
I'll take care of her.
We'll get your burst to HQ soonest, Stella.
On the way back to Fourth Blue, Rafe took every opportunity to check for followers. They dodged through restaurants, clothing stores, even a weapons shop. Rafe seemed to know everyone. Finally, they took a drop tube to Second and worked their way back up through Blue Sector, stopping at Third to pick up the new ID from Tommy.
Don't be surprised. Tommy's been a bad boy, and I have to do a little cleanup.
Cleanup, where Rafe was concerned, had many variant meanings, including sudden death. Stella shrugged. If Tommy had set pursuers on them, she didn't care what Rafe did to him. Inside, Tommy was talking to three people who seemed to share the dominant decorating style of the place. He didn't notice them until Rafe picked up the bald man and deposited him on an odd-shaped couch. The skinny one whirled, but Stella had her weapon out.
Don't.
He backed away, almost falling over a low table. That left the woman with the low-cut silver snug suit, who walked over and sat on the bald man.
Tommy.
Tommy shook his head, eyes wide.
Have you been a bad boy, Tommy?
Not me. I didn't. It was
I think you have, Tommy. I think you've been a very bad boy.
Stella realized with a lurch of disgust that Tommy's former customers were watching this avidly, and that Rafe was playing to them as well as to Tommy.
I asked you to do one simple thing. One simple thing, and you couldn't even get that right. When whining off to somebody for sympathy, didn't you, Tommy?
I told you it would take longer. I couldn't.
Excuses, Tommy. Excuses are worth nothing. You know there will be consequences.
No.
Oh, yes.
Rafe glanced at the erstwhile customers who were sitting in a row now, flushed and excited, and then watched Tommy as he ticked off points on his fingers.
First, disobedience. Then disloyalty in running off to someone else. And then, I don't suppose you have completed the assignment.
I did. It's ready, but...
Well, that's something. But the fact remains, Tommy, that you have been a bad boy. And bad boys must be punished. Sally, check in Tommy's office and see if he's telling the truth about the assignment or if he lied.
Stella, in the persona she'd been assigned, wove her way quickly through the furniture and into Tommy's office. A folder on his desk with Rafe on the cover, she looked inside. Three sets of alternate ID that looked reasonably good to her less practiced eye. A stack of credits, which probably came from betraying them, with a call number, lay beside the folder. She scooped it all up, stuffed it in another folder, and went back to the front, where Rafe's rather disgusting banter had Tommy trembling and the watchers bright-eyed.
The assignment was complete, but he had a stack of money and a call number with it.
Naughty Tommy. And what shall we do with a naughty boy,
Rafe glanced again at his audience.
Should I tell them who else you've been playing with, perhaps?
Tommy jumped as if he'd been touched with a live wire.
No!
He has very special tastes. You'd be surprised, But I think there's a punishment to fit this crime, Tommy. One particularly suitable to someone of your type. Over here. Oh!
Stella pretended disdain while Rafe attached Tommy to some of his merchandise.
Of course, Tommy will forfeit the reward I promised him for doing a tedious chore, but I have important matters to attend to. Perhaps you three would like to amuse yourselves in the store until Tommy manages to get himself loose? If he can get himself loose.
Rafe, really, don't do this!
And don't pay any attention to his protests, of course. When Tommy's been bad, he likes to pretend he's better than all this. I'll just shut the door on my way out and turn the sign. Everybody knows Tommy's hours are irregular, along with other parts of his life. I'm in your debt.
He put his hands together and bowed.
Oh, we'll be glad to help. We haven't seen you in here before.
Few see me, but all remember me.
Stella nearly choked on that one, but maintained her calm until they were outside and Tommy's store had a big closed sign facing the passage.
What were you doing in there?
Having fun. I'm assuming you got the cash and the number?
Of course.
Then it's back home in a hurry and hope that our boy Toby hasn't had to use that blunderbuss I left him with, or there won't be much left of the shop.
But Scurry Lane was peaceful and normally busy. Stella called Toby by implant, and he said nothing had happened.
We're coming in the back, Toby. Rafe's going to pick up some food.
And some gossip, certainly. 10 minutes later, they were all in the upper office. Rafe peered at the new ID.
Functional, not perfect, but it should do. Stella, you'll want to dull your hair a bit, maybe use a cheek pad. Toby will do as he is. Now to find transport.
There is one ship leaving today and two tomorrow. I checked while you were out. Thought you'd need to know.
Did I tell you to open a comm line?
Stella glared at Rafe.
Good thinking, Toby. What ID did you use?
None. Straight open inquiry by implant. ID hidden.
Two of a kind, I see. All right, Toby. Who's off today and what capacity?
Rose of Banoth, Roselines Limited. Dex said Roselines were small, but pretty good. Just not as fancy as the Empress line. Mostly passenger, light cargo. She has 10 berths available to Placer B, then 8 to Golwa, and then she's going to Lastway.
That's handy. Rafe?
We need to leave, and this ship is leaving. I wouldn't care if she was going to Slaughter Key or Sabine. All right, I'll book us passage. Stella, if you'll keep an eye on the external scans, and Toby, make a list of anything you need. A little ship like that won't have much commissary capacity.
Rafe opened up his secure line and got to work. Toby, after a look at the back of Rafe's head, put on the thoughtful look that Stella knew went with accessing an implant database. Stella hoped his apprentice voyage had borne in on him the need for extra underwear, but she wasn't going to embarrass him by mentioning it.
I've got the berths, but they're not taking credit. They'll accept hard goods with a current appraisal, and they're undocking in 5 hours, 16 minutes. We have to be aboard in 4.5.
You know an appraiser, of course.
Several. Let me just check with one of them.
He went back to work. Toby glanced at Stella.
I have a list. I don't know if it's too much.
Port it over and let's see.
He had remembered underwear. 3 additional ship suits, another pair of ship boots, underwear, toiletry items.
That's fine. I think you could use more than that, though. You need your own pressure suit, a fleece jacket.
We've no time for custom fitting. I've got our appraisal lined up. A couple of those rocks you had will cover your ticket and Toby's.
And yours?
I pay my own way. Partnership.
Fine.
Stella fished out the top pouch and shook out 2 of the largest.
I'll get Toby's kit while you're doing that. Want me to pack for you?
No. I can do that in 15 minutes. Will you have to take him out?
No. I was going to work through a Chandler's and order it delivered to the ship. I can draw on the existing Vada accounts here to cover it. I'd already talked to the bank manager.
Good. I'll be back shortly. I'll call before I come in.
Left alone, Stella measured Toby, contacted a Chandler's that was closest to Rose of Banoth's dock, and ordered his clothes, pressure suit, and the duffel to carry them, charged to the Vada account number, and delivered to the Rose's dockside. Then she contacted the Rose's purser to find out if passengers could, or were expected to, contribute to the mess supplies. Optional, she was told, but the Rose carried standard plus rations, not superior. Stella ordered in 4 sets of ration upgrades. When Toby's appetite came back, he would probably eat twice as much as she did. In Rafe's bathroom, she found supplies to dull her hair to a more maternal shade and tried the cheek pads, which blurred her prominent cheekbones. Rafe returned without incident, with jewels and a current appraisal. He packed almost as swiftly as he'd said, then called the police to report his departure until business improves, and put a large deposit with station management to reserve his space. In less than 2 hours, they were on their way to Third Green, where the Rose was docked. Stella felt itchy all over, but nothing happened. No assassins leapt out of doorways, no shots were fired, no one accosted them for being who they were or anyone else. At the docking bay, Toby's duffel was being inspected by the ship's sergeant-at-arms. When they identified themselves by their new ID, he nodded.
Just step over there, please, and see Anson about your ticket. Your berths are on hold. If you'll leave your duffel here, I'll check it for you.
Restrictions on weapons?
Ship-safe ammunition only. No chemstun, no bios. We allow small arms only after inspection.
Here's mine.
Stella pulled out her weapon and handed it over. Rafe said nothing but handed over 3 to her 1. The sergeant looked at Toby, who shook his head. Then they lined up at the ticketing booth, where the agent approved the appraisal, put the diamonds in a lockbox, gave them a receipt, and issued boarding chips and shipboard ID tags with locators on them.
Wear these at all times. That way we can find you in an emergency, and you'll be recognized by the ship's security system. You still have a little time before mandatory boarding if you need to purchase any last-minute items from dockside, or you can go aboard now.
We'll board.
Is all your duffel wanted on the voyage, or do you wish some in deep storage?
All wanted.
Fine. It will be delivered to your cabins before undock. Probably a half hour, not more. If you decide to leave the ship for any reason before you undock, you must inform the purser and check with me. Here, where you will exchange your shipboard ID tag for a dockside locator call button.
Stella clipped the shipboard ID tag to her lapel. The gangway into the Rose had a thin strip of industrial-grade carpet, with a bright yellow reflective strip on either side and the warning, "Stay on carpet." Once inside, the ship's decor carried out the Rose Line's theme, with soft roses, creams, and touches of red and green. They were met by a steward who checked them off a list and led them to their cabins down a passage carpeted in rows with a burgundy geometric border. The cabins connected to form a small suite, complete with a small common room. Stella, recently off the courier with its cramped, bare-bones passenger space, was delighted with them.
You're welcome to visit the main passenger lounge and the dining salon. You'll find a layout in hard copy in the desk or on screen. Just follow the menu directions. Or you can wait here until your duffel arrives. However, when the undock warning sounds, all passengers must return to their cabins and the sector seals will come down.
Thank you.
When they were alone, she and Rafe examined the safety features of the cabins and that end of the corridor. Their ship ID tags each opened one of the 3 cabins. These could be rekeyed, the desk brochure explained, for members of one party traveling together.
Or by members of a party that has the right members.
Each cabin had its own vacuum seals, and each connecting suite had an additional seal in the passage. Clearly, Rose Lines took safety seriously. So did Rafe. When their luggage arrived a few minutes later, Rafe insisted that they unpack everything and put it away in the cabins.
If we have an emergency, we want our suits out. Toby, did you have your suit drill aboard ship?
Yes, of course. I told you already.
Good. We'll have them here, whether the captain orders them or not.
The voyage to Placer B and then Galois was uneventful, except that Toby's appetite returned, and he seemed to hit a growth spurt as well. Toby seemed fascinated by Rafe's chameleon kit and begged to try it. Rafe taught him the rudiments of disguise. The ship suits that fit Toby at Alway were almost too small by the time they got to Galois. Stella and Toby stayed aboard at these intermediate stops, each of only a couple days' duration. But Rafe bought Toby some larger clothes at Galois. After Galois, they were the only passengers on the way to Lastway. The news was not reassuring. Only 20% of Ansible platforms were up, so that most systems had a several-week communications lag. Both passengers and cargo shipments were down. Investment market reports were all out of date, but expected to worsen. Golwa was one of the lucky systems with a functioning Ansible, so Stella was able to contact ISCHQ and discover that her report had made it there safely. In Lastway's system, the ship's crew reported that the Lastway Ansibles were also functioning. Stella checked the list of ships docked at Lastway. A K Vata with the ship Gary Tobai was listed. That would be Kai, of course. The local news channel, piped to passengers' quarters, mentioned sporadic gang attacks on travelers and warned any tourists to keep alert and stay out of danger zones. Through the purser, Stella booked on-station quarters for the three of them at a moderately priced hostelry. She could only hope that whoever was after Vada's didn't have a face recognition program that included hers and Toby's. Rafe, she knew, would take care of himself. The purser arranged transport of their duffel, and the three of them made it to the hotel without incident. The next job was contacting Kai. Stella considered and rejected the on-station communications lines. Too dangerous. She and Rafe and Toby, posing as tourists, climbed on the tram and headed for Gary Tobai.
Vada's War, Mark and Reprisal is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2004, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Sheeran, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Jonathan Watkins, Joe Brack, Barbara Pinellini, Lily Beacon, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Tim Getman, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Andy Clements, Michael John Casey, Casey Platt, Yasmin Toison, Terrence Aselford, Elizabeth Jernigan, James Konacek, Eric Messner, Laura Quinn Anderson, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Scott McCormick, and Christopher Graybill. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. Additional original music by Chris Rowan and Matt Webb. If you enjoyed Vada's War, be sure to look for Rogue Angel and the Serrano Legacy. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Cadet Vada?
Sir!
You are a disgrace to the service.
Sir?
Many, many people want your head on a pike. I'm going to see your resignation on my desk by 1500 hours this afternoon.
I, Kailara Evangeline Dominique Vada, hereby resign from the Academy for personal reasons.
Now we have to figure out what to do with
you. Dad, listen.
We're sending you out to the Rift with a ship going to salvage. You're taking the Glennis Jones to Lastway.
You're making me captain?
Courage, Kai. You've got what you need to start a good life. Go.
What if I can make enough in trade to buy Glennis? And fix her up and own my own ship?
I need to talk to you.
What's up?
We have a contract to deliver a cargo of agricultural machinery to Belinta. What?
Kai. We wondered how long it'd take.
Trade and profit, right? Well, let's take a look at this contract you signed. We have to buy the goods up front?
Of course. I thought Sabine Prime. Sabine has several manufacturers of the kind of equipment they want.
But it's worth trying.
Mandatory repairs. We have to replace that sealed unit.
Secundus has threatened to blockade Prime.
Prime and Secundus are moving towards war this time.
Sabine's system is now cut off from regular communication with the rest of the universe.
We have a problem. Warships. Get us away from the station, Riel.
Glynis Jones, acknowledge.
Captain Vada, Glynis Jones.
Glynis Jones, this is the Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation ship Victor. You will proceed alone down the escape passage to the lock. You will operate the lock for our boarding personnel. You will obey the orders of their commanding officer. If you disobey, your ship is toast. Got that?
You're Captain Vada?
Yes.
Start back up the passage. Tell him to sit down on the deck, hands on knees.
Where's Skeldon?
He was here a second ago.
Skeldon!
Pit to Victor. Send me a medic. Live, damn it.
From Elizabeth Moon, creator of the Serrano Legacy, a compelling new sci-fi series, Vata's War. Book 1, Trading in Danger, Part 1, in graphic audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.